Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Question Reality. I'm Priscilla Leona, producer and host of this show, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. For 10 years, we have been ranked the number one internet entertainment career advice radio show. And this is the show for you to listen to if you're currently pursuing or if you're dreaming about a career in the entertainment industry. The guests on our show will help you by providing tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to pursue a successful career in a wide variety of show business professions. Now, the guests on this show include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony Award winners, reality TV stars, film and music producers, film and television directors, theater directors, casting directors, talent managers, screenwriters, actors, singers, songwriters, comedians, script supervisors, stunt people, and we have some entertainment attorneys on towards the end of the year. Now, if you missed any of our shows, please go to our archive page, which is on the latalkradio.com website, and search for our show, which is Question Reality, or you can search by my name, Priscilla Leona, and we are there for you 24 hours a day. So we're there. Now, all of the Question Reality shows are also available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.com under the podcast section. And please make sure that you get our free mobile app. It's on the homepage of the LA Talk Radio website. It's located on the right-hand side towards the bottom. You do have to scroll a little bit. So again, scroll, and on the right-hand side. And finally, if you want to be a guest on our show or refer someone to be on this show to promote and showcase themselves, their products, and genuinely help listeners with sage career advice, we are currently booking professionals September through December. And there's only a few, two dates in November, two dates in December, because you know how I like to vacation. So I will be vacationing for a month. Yes, I can vacation. So pretty much September or October are like the hot months you want to target. Now, to do that, you have to go to our official website, which is totally different than this website. It's questionrealityradioshow.com, questionrealityradioshow.com. That's our official website where you go and submit yourself for consideration to be on the show. Okay, yay! It's always fun, isn't it? Now, we are so excited for this guest. Well, as you know, if you've been a loyal listener, which we have like 200,000 on Twitter and then millions all over the world, I don't know why, but I have a huge following in Slovenia. I have no idea. When I got the statistics, I said, wow, what kind of vibe am I giving off in Slovenia? I don't know, but I might find my next husband in Slovenia. I told Albert, you better watch out because they're hot for me in Slovenia. Okay, so the guest on the show is from, as you know, how obsessed I am with everything England. Everything England. You know, I lived in England for 6 months, and it was probably one of the best times of my life. the best time ever. You know, I did a gap year and went to England and had so much fun. Partied at the Empire nightclub and shopped at Harrods. And I tell you, that was back when I had my Marilyn Monroe body. So I was gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. So the boys, I had to beat them off with a baseball bat. London was mine back in the day. But anyway, now, you know, I'm obsessed with Harry Styles of One Direction. So I'm back. I went off of London for a while, but now I'm back with One Direction and Harry Styles. But talking to this gentleman today, as soon as I heard his voice, I just became all a flutter. His name is Neil Fitzsimon of Fitzsimon and Brogan, and they are a London pop rock duo. Now, Neil Fitzsimon, we'll be discussing their latest album, which is entitled Big Blue World. And Neil Fitzsimon and his partner, B. Brogan, they produce, and I'm going to put this out there. This is like their thing. This is what they do. They produce pure pop for now people. And we're going to find out what now people are. Who are the now people? Because I want to be in the know and in the now, so I got to know who the now people are. And Neil and B were both members of the band Pretty Blue Gun, signed to an indie label that was licensed to Sony. And they released two albums which were critically acclaimed. And I'm going to be playing one of Fitzsimon and Brogan songs from their latest album called Big Blue World, and that's also the self-titled album. It's a song from the self-titled album. That's always hard. You got the album called Big Blue World, and then there's the song. That always throws me up. It makes me, like, become verklempt. So we're going to be playing that around 5:30 p.m. And their website, if you want to check them out, is Fitzsimon and Brogan. That's FitzsimonandBrogan.com. So we are going to be talking to the gorgeous, hot, sexy Neil. Now, I'm going to just suppose that he's all of those things because I've never seen him, because that's one of their things. That's one of their things. They got this Sia thing going on. It's absolutely fascinating. We're going to be talking to him. I could not get a picture of this man. Usually with every guest, we produce, you know, a picture of the band or the artist, and it was like pulling teeth to get a picture. I never did, but I did get a picture of the album cover art, which is gorgeous, by the way. I don't know who did that, but I'll find out. And so we're going to talk to him about how that's working for him, and find out if that's a route that maybe you want to take. Now, before we talk to Neil, I want to tell you about the NSAEN Film Festival. Now, as you know, I am a judge at the NSAEN Film Festival. And so this is a plug. Yes, it is. It is a plug for my film festival. And also, I am a screener for the Burbank International Film Festival, which is later on this year. We're submitting, accepting submissions. But right now, we are accepting film submissions, NSAEN.com. The film festival winner is going to get a distribution deal with Shammy Media Group. And Shammy is a company that distributes media content worldwide through cable TV, mobile, online digital platforms, airlines, and physical outlets. For example, if you're the winner, your film could be on Netflix or Hulu or Pop TV or Prime Video. So those are the outlets that is a possibility depending on what your film is. So that is a huge, huge reason why you should submit to our film festival. So we all know what a film festival is, but what I wanted everyone to know is that NSAEN Film Festival recognizes that there's a growing community of disabled filmmakers. And we enthusiastically invite them to participate by submitting their films. And what I also love that I don't even know any other film festival that does this, which is great about NSAEN. They take a portion of the submission fees that are donated, that are paid, and they donate them to Cheers to the Warriors. That is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and its primary mission is to provide financial assistance through monetary grants to U.S. veterans that have been injured in combat. So again, I don't know any other film festival that's doing that. So it is one to consider for sure. And not just because I'm one of the judges. I don't think you're getting special treatment if you submit it to me, because ethically, I cannot screen your film. But it's always good. If I recommend it, you know that it's legit, because you know I don't play in deception. So that is a plus. Now, without further ado, are you ready? Because I briefly talked to Neil Fitzsimmons before the show, and I love his accent. And it's not just because he's British. It's because he's got that sexy British accent. Now, you know you've heard those posh, you know, upper class accents, like, you know, Prince, oh God, who the hell is the damn Prince? Prince Harry and Prince William. And they're like, but Neil's got that sexy Beatles accent going on, right? So without further ado, welcome to the show, Neil Fitzsimmons.
Oh, hello there, Priscilla. Thanks for inviting me on. I wish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you do. You're just being modest. You're a typical British man. Oh, no, you're kind of going to say, yeah, I drive them crazy. Yeah. All right. Now, Neil, you are the songwriter, and your partner, B. Brogan, is the vocalist.
Yeah.
And you are quoted as you're described as the a London pop/rock duo. And you have been quoted as saying that you aim to produce, again, pure pop for now people. So as I asked earlier, who and what are the now people? Where does that phrase come from?
Well, it actually comes, we like a lot of musicians, we borrowed it from somebody. It comes from Nick Lowe, who produced all the Costello albums. He's producer, you know, that did Oliver's Army and all that stuff. And he said that his music was pure pop for now people, and we just thought that was really good. It was a long time ago that he said that, but we picked up on it, we read about it, and we thought, well, you know, what a great saying that is. And I suppose we say that in a way because of the type of stuff we're doing now, like the pop rock thing. It used to be in vogue, but now it's almost become like considered left field, which I find a bit strange.
Really? Why do you think so? What happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, particularly like in the UK, our type of music it's not in vogue at the moment, I suppose you would say. But in the States, I still think there's a big market, and we have definitely aimed all of our stuff at the US market. And that's why we went for a USA management company, even though we've got a French record label, which is a bit strange.
I love that. You're covering all your bases, Neil.
That's right.
Covering the European area. You got the US. Now, that I have personally, and I can only speak for myself, I have never, ever felt that British music was ever out of style. I mean, that is like the only music I really, really, the bands, pretty much the ones that I love are all British. Now, of course, Harry Styles in One Direction. Now, come on. I know they broke off, but you know, it is so crazy, Neil. This band started, I mean, they won on the X Factor, obviously. Simon Cowell discovered them. Of course, he has an argument with the Scherzinger chick about who really came up with the idea to put them together. But they, I guess, they represent probably one of the biggest pop bands in England, or is that not true for the British people, the way they feel about it? I mean, we love them over here.
It's amazing. I mean, because actually they didn't win X Factor. They came third.
I know they lost. All of them were like voted out. Can you imagine?
Yeah. And then, they did put them together for the show, but I think they only came third. And then after that, it all took off for them, didn't it? Really like mad. I don't think anyone in this country thought it was going to go as global as what it did. But it's not really my type of stuff, all of it. But they are catchy songs. You know, the first one.
Is there pop in England? Is their music when the One Direction? Of course, they've been broken up since 2015. But were they considered pop music in England?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely, okay. Yeah, pop music.
So they were huge though. So at least pop was still living through One Direction, at least.
Yeah, I just think it's bands that have suffered that are doing our type of stuff. You know, like as. You know, we're big fans of the Beatles, myself and Bea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. My husband lives and breathes the Beatles.
Yeah, I do as well. I'm a big Beatle bore. I am, absolutely.
He read your bio, and he got so excited. And I said, wait a minute, you're reading this wrong. When he saw that, what did he see? He saw that you recorded, and that's a question a little bit down the road, and we'll touch upon this more. But he saw Abbey Road, and he's like, oh, my God, they recorded at Abbey Road. I said, wait a minute, you who do not see that it actually says, was it Greenhouse?
Greenhouse studio.
It's not the same as the Abbey Road studio, right? Or is it?
Well, we recorded at Greenhouse, and that was our producer, Pat Collier. That was his own studio. But we did record at Abbey Road as well. Yeah, where the Beatles did. Yeah.
Definitely. Oh my God! Stop it! Oh my God! So let's I'm going to talk about that later, because I'm extremely organized and I can't deviate from when I organize things in a chronological order. So we're going to talk about that, but I feel like jumping to it now. But so why do you feel, you were saying that you feel like pop music is not in vogue right now in England, pop music, or is it just pop duos?
I think it's like pop rock, like with guitars. Really, I mean, they are classed now mainly as like indie bands.
And they
don't. What I'm basically saying is that is not what is considered chart music now. It's all like EDM and stuff like that on the radio, and you know, which I personally find a little bit depressing because it all sounds the same.
Neil, I'm going to ask you, what the heck has happened? Because, you know, my husband, he's a software developer by day, but on the weekend, he's a jazz musician, jazz guitar.
All right.
Yeah. So he, of course, he's old school Eric Clapton, the Beatles, you know, the Who, you know, Led Zeppelin, all that. So he has said there has been, and I've noticed it too, there are practically no songs today that have guitar in them. What the hell happened to the guitar?
I know. I think in the States you're better off than what we are, because now, I mean, I was speaking to somebody, this woman, and her son was interested in getting into the music business. And I said, well, can he play anything? She said, no. I said, well, I said, you've really got to learn to play something. I said, because unless you do, you're just beholden to people and you'll never break out on your own. And it just seems to me a lot of people now, they don't want to go through the hard work it takes, like to actually learn something. I think like the X Factor generation, they've all like think instant fame overnight, you know, just like a commodity they use and then thrown away. So I think that, as you said, it's a bit depressing.
Yeah, well, you know what is in vogue now? I am obsessed with Graham Norton, so I never miss his show, right? Oh my God! So that's where I discovered Harry Styles for One Direction, right? I didn't even know who the hell One Direction was. I'm just like, by the time I discovered him, Neil, they had broken up I just discovered him last year, right? Oh, it's crazy. But anyway, he has, of course, the latest bands on, right? So, yeah. But what's happening now in the music business, from what I understand, and I'm not in the music business, I only have to go by, is what's happening is a singer and a DJ. He brought on this group, this girl, Dua Lipa, and she's a vocalist, and Calvin Harris played, you know, and it was like a full, I'm like, where the hell's the band? Because it sounded like it was a full band, but it was just him on a keyboard. I don't even know how they did that. I don't know how that worked, but that's what's going on. It's a vocalist and a DJ, and that is what the trend is now. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, a DJ, I just cannot get my head around that. And DJs are paid a small fortune now. I mean, some of the DJs were years ago. Some of the DJs in this country were getting £25,000 a gig.
Yep.
I mean, it's mostly a lot more than that now. But I mean, it's for sequencing records. And as you said about some of the female vocalists today, there's almost like a generic sound about them as well. They all sound the same, really. You could shake them all up and you wouldn't know.
Yes, like Dua Lipa, I love her, but if you listen like the first 30 seconds, you go, oh, is that Adele? You know, because they're all copying Adele. You know, Adele, in my opinion, is unique. So I think they're all trying to get that Adele sound. It's very sad that now, what the heck are happening to musicians? People, you know, millennials, and I think the generation after, I think it's Gen Z or X. I'm not sure what, I think Z. But they do not have the attention span. No offense, that's just how we're evolving as a people. Nothing against them. That's just what's happening in the world. But they don't have the attention span to sit and ever listen to a song by Led Zeppelin with a 20-minute like guitar solo, or Heart with Barracuda and the 5-minute guitar solo. They couldn't do that now. They want it like really fast. I don't know where music is heading as far as having any quality, Neil. What do you feel about that?
I think you're exactly right. I think it's just like, it's almost like instant gratification now, isn't it, with people? Either it happens in a couple of minutes or they're just not interested. Yeah, and I find that sad. And, you know, I mean, when you see like people just walking around like with their headphones in all day, they can't seem to do anything without their headphones in, you know, from their phone. And I find that a bit sad as well. And the way that they listen to music. Of course. I mean, when I, you know, when I was a kid and everything, it was like getting the album, lying down on your bed, listening to the whole album with the lyric sheet in front of you, you know.
Right. And the album, and you were excited if you got the poster.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then you'd get the pull-out poster. You could put it on the wall. I mean, it doesn't. Oh, my God. But people, you know, young people have argued with me about that. And I kind of agree to a certain point because, I mean, if you just want one song and you have to pay for the whole album, you kind of didn't want to do it. Because I ran across the albums that were, I only like one song on the whole album. So I like the idea where you can just buy the song on iTunes now. So I'm only spending $1.29 as opposed to the whole album. But I do know what you're saying. There is that nostalgia factor that is missing of the whole album. So when you, going back to what you said, where you're going, who, and you know, you are pure pop for now people. Yeah. I'm like, the now people are the millennials and the Gen Z. So are you adjusting and acclimating your music to fit that now people scene?
I mean, we've been told by the record company as well, one of the reasons they signed is that our music is very young sounding and up and you know, like in people's faces. And that's what we've tried to do. I mean, we haven't done that, you know, by design, really. It's just like happened. But it is surprising. I mean, I've a relative of mine, he's only about 14, and I've like indoctrinated him into the Beatles, and he won't listen to anything else now. So you know, that those people are still out there, I suppose, and that's what we're aiming for, those with a bit who can discern what is a proper tune.
Yes, that is, if it's by the Beatles, people, you can't go wrong. I mean, everything the Beatles did, I mean, if you take the songs from the Beatles and you play them now, you could not discern a 60s sound. They sound completely modern. And it was just brilliant. I don't know how they did it, but it is very hard to take, say, a 50s song and play it. Now, you're going to know that's from the 50s. But if you listen to a Beatles song, it's like, you would, if you played that for a 14-year-old, they would not know that it wasn't a now song, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, if you take a song, say, like, which I suppose my favourite Beatles track is Strawberry Fields Forever. I mean, that could have, I mean, God knows what he was on when he wrote that. But I mean, it's
that's good.
That's an unbelievable song, isn't it? I mean, I just can't work that out. You know, all the other stuff they, you know, there's too many to mention, you know, I mean. And stuff like that.
Obladee, Oblada. Oh my gosh, so many. If you pulled them out, they're just timeless. And that is something that you can't say for too many bands. Now, there have been many bands that have constantly reinvented themselves, like The Who, you know, and they're constantly, you know, Mick Jagger, The Rolling Stones. I mean, they've constantly reinvented themselves, hooking up with like MC, was it Running DMC and making their music more modern, and they can do it, but I'm just talking about the individual song itself. So it is definitely a good idea to follow the Beatles, try to indoctrinate people into the Beatles sound. Now, you have kind of gone, I want to talk about, you've kind of gone the Sia route, as I said, at least for photos. And, you know, as I said, I couldn't find a photo of either you or B to promote for this show. And you've done that purposely, because I understand that you say that you prefer to remain faceless in an industry that holds image in high regard. Can you elaborate on this decision? Also, how has it affected your musical journey?
Well, I think there is actually a couple of pictures of us on that 752.2 radio on our overview. They've got a picture of myself and B in a studio. But I think it all stems back from like when we got our first record deal. B especially was not prepared for the scrutiny she was put under as a female, and the rest of the band weren't. We seemed to talk more about image than what we did about music, and it really used to get on our nerves. I understand it's important, but I think it might slightly have gone the other way now, because it's just, you know, again, like in all the videos you watch, they've all got the same look, they're all doing the same moves, and we just felt, you know, I've always admired, I don't know if you've heard of a band called Tintin Out, who wrote stuff for other people and everything. And they put their own stuff out, but they always used to like get a guest vocalist or talk or bands like that. And you never really knew what they looked like. And we thought, you know, because we told the French people we're not going down that route, and they, you know, they've gone along with it. But we did have a lot of really boring photo shoots. I mean, they used to keep Trudy in makeup for about 5 to 6 hours, you know, so it was, you know, when she came out, I didn't recognize her, to be quite honest. No, I didn't recognize her.
6 hours?
Yeah, she came out looking like a painted doll. Yeah, I know, it was awful. And
crazy. God.
Yeah, I had an A&R man phone me up and said, you know, we're not happy with like some of the disclosure. I said, yeah, but you're happy with it? He said, we're happy with the songs. I said, well, don't speak to me then. I don't want to talk to you. And like that, and, you know, I don't mention A&R men. Oh, God, so.
You're so funny. Well, let me ask you, how does that mean that you guys don't perform live?
No, we don't perform live at all.
Wow.
No, but we did all of that with Pretty Blue Gun. We did the all over the UK. We toured. Do you remember a film called The Commitments?
Yeah. Oh my God, I love that film, The Commitments. When I had to run out and buy the, I could actually buy the record back then. You could actually buy, yes! What about The Commitments?
Yeah, we toured with them around the UK.
Because they did, it was their first, they had the first CD, and then I think they had two after that, too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Because I got the second one, but I never got a third one. I don't even know if they did a third one, but I know they did a second one. I love them. What the hell happened to The Commitments?
Yeah, we toured the country, and you know they were Irish band, and they were completely mad. They really were, you know what I mean. But in a nice way, and they were quite supportive as well. You know, being the support act, some the headline act don't bother like you know talking to you. But it was actually good because one day in their sound check, they actually played one of our songs for a laugh, which I thought was quite nice for them to do that. And it was good. But I can honestly say I've never been so tired in my life after the couple of months that we did. I think if anyone thinks it's an easy ride being on tour, I think they need to think again, because it makes you into a really good, tight band. But, you know, when you're traveling from one place to another every day, then you do a sound check, then you do it again, then everything's packed away and off you go. But it was great. And when it stopped, I felt lost, to be quite honest, just to go back to normal life.
Yeah, I don't know how One Direction did it, because they started when they were like 16, 17 years old.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's easier if you do start that young, because it's kind of, well, if you don't know anything else and you're 16, then that's what you learn to know. Rather than if you start at 25 or 30, then maybe it's a little harder. So who knows? Now, does that mean, since you're not performing live and everything, is this going to be a permanent decision? I mean, what about award shows and they take photos and do you mind that? Or I'm just all about this thing. I mean, it's working for Sia, but I don't know how the hell she sees. No pun intended through that wig. That's so crazy.
If we consider them. I just think the. Well, mainly, I mean, our public, we've got three publishers, one in the States, one in the UK, and one in France, who are also the label. And they are pitching a lot of our stuff for film and TV. So,
I love that. I heard that you guys had your songs placed in film and television, and you just had a song placed in a US sci-fi feature film. What's the name of the feature film?
I think it was Project London or something. It was a very small budget film, but I mean they were kind enough. They took the track and remastered it and everything like that, and they showed. But we've had stuff on national TV here, like in a couple of soap operas where they've played our stuff, like Hollyoaks, which is quite a big soap over here. They've played our stuff, and we've had a few bits and pieces in South Africa as well for some reason. I don't know why, but where the music ends up now is, you know, it's a mystery. But that's the thing we're looking to get. And I think a lot of musicians now, the first thing, you know, when I speak to people now and even publishers, we think that would be great in TV. Not that it would be like a hit on the radio. To get a placement in a film, there's a lot of money in it. So that's what all the publishers are looking to do now.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something that happened, and you might want to consider this.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with this show that you guys have, which they introduced as part of the Teen Mom franchise here, and it's called Teen Mom, MUM, obviously, for what you guys call your mother. Teen Mom UK. So they aired it for the first season here, and then to introduce it, and then it never came back. And I understand it's huge over in England, so of course we can't watch it here, but I did some research and I found it, and I'm watching it. So I hear this song called OD, and I did a Shazam. I'm sure you're familiar with Shazam. It's your song. Okay, so I Shazammed it and I could not find it. I'm looking. Well, I have had my assistant do some serious research. It took her like 2 weeks. Finally, she found the guy who wrote the song. It turns out he's in DC, Washington, DC. And I contacted him and I told him, I said, your song's not on iTunes. I love it and I'd really love to buy it. Do you know that he did not even know that his song was being used on that show?
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
And when I told him, of course, he's with BMI. So he contacted them, and I guess they do whatever they do to, you know. But there are so many songs that these music supervisors on on television shows are stealing and just putting on shows. And it's terrible. Yeah. It's not fair. But, you know, that is something you got to look out for. But what I was going to say is that, that your songs could also, you can submit them to music supervisors for use in their shows to do it legitimately. But of course, but are you saying that if somebody had, say, you know, a film producer, say they are listening right now, they like the song we're about to hear, and they go, wow, I'd really love Neil and B to write a song for us. Is that something that you guys do?
Yeah, because we've just done a couple, actually. We've done a brief for the UK publisher. We had to do something for a documentary on Bill Wyman.
So you would that's not an insult. That is a compliment.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. They call them like briefs, don't they? Like you get a brief for what they're looking. We had to do an instrumental a guitar thing the other week. So we put that together, and they've been pitching out to two different companies. Yeah. So that's good. We like doing it because we've got our own studio at home now. So it's
so
good.
You get to do it right in your studio. That's good to know. That is really good to know. So when you hear his song, if you like what you're listening to, contact Mr. Neil, and you might have him write a song just for your film. Because I'm about to, because I'm a producer, I'm a film producer, so I have my own production company. And right now I'm about to, try to look for a screenwriter that will write me a Christmas film, because I'm obsessed with Christmas, and I've always wanted to produce a Christmas movie, and I want original songs for that. But I'm about to do that. But it takes a very special type of songwriter to write Christmas songs, because they're very hard to write, extremely hard. But I'm right now in the middle of producing. I'm one of the producers on two feature films, and one is $1 million+ budget. So it's like, I got to focus on that first, but that's where I'm going to be going. So if you know anybody that writes Christmas songs, please have them contact me.
I do actually.
you write Christmas music?
Well, we've got
you
one.
You never have, but you give it a try, right?
Oh, no. We've got one already recorded. It was used in a musical that myself and B, right? That was like put on the stage in London. And the song is about the girl realizing, thinking back from one Christmas to another when she had the boy. And now, and it's called Maybe It's That Time of Year. So if you want, I'll send that to you.
Oh, my God. I can't believe this. Send that to me. Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's fabulous. Oh, that might be wonderful. Oh, so please send that to me for sure.
I will,
Okay, I got to play this song. I got to get to. Okay, you guys also wrote a musical, Jack Dagger, which was showcased at the British Theatre London for the Musical Futures Award. Yeah. And it also showcased at the Bridewell and Royal College of Music in London.
Yeah.
And that's very, very special. I'm very familiar with those venues, so you got to be very proud of that. Very proud of that. And I also understand that, I think this is what you were talking about, you recently had a track called This Is Love reach number 3 on a French national download chart, and then it was also the semi-finalist Eurovision contest. Now, as I said, I learn everything about England watching Graham Norton. I never even heard of the Eurovision contest before I started watching Graham Norton. Now, I'm still not entirely sure what it is, and there haven't been too many people here who have heard of it either, other than people in the music industry. So can you real briefly tell us what the Eurovision contest is and what happened to your duo as a result of being in the contest?
Oh, yeah. The track that got to number 3 was in France, and it was The Cutest and the Cruelest, which is off another album. But This Is Love, you're right, that got to the semi-final of Eurovision. We were asked by a publisher. I had to come up with a couple of songs in a couple of weeks. And so This Is Love got to the semi-final, and The Girl Who Shouted Love got to the quarterfinals of it. It was a good experience, but now, I don't know if you know, you're watching Graham Norton, it's become a bit of a poison chalice now, the Eurovision, because it is viewed a little bit, you know, a lot of people mock it, because whoever goes in for it ends their career. So,
really? Well, I didn't know that. I don't.
Well, it's because how come? It's because of the voting system now. It's like the voting in Europe is that, you know, one country that likes another country will vote for that one. We last won it in 1997 with Katrina and the Waves, and that was Pat Collier, who we work with Love Shine a Light. Of course, ABBA came through the Eurovision Song Contest. They won it with Waterloo back in the 70s. And it had a little bit more credence then, but now it's a little bit viewed, I don't know, like it's fixed. Like, you know, yeah, it's unbelievable for us in the UK because Ireland don't vote for us.
Oh, my, are you kidding?
No, they don't. They can't stand us.
Oh, God, I had no idea that was going on.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Oh, yeah, because he brings on a lot of people that won the Eurovision contest. So I thought that was like a big thing. If you win the contest, you get to be on the Graham Norton show. He apparently is very smitten with it.
Yeah, he's the host. He does the commentary on British TV.
I didn't know that. I don't think I ever heard him mention that. Oh, that may be why. Well, there you go, Paola again. Oh, bummer. Yeah. Okay. Well, did you reap any rewards from, you know, coming in three at all? Any kind of progress on, or no?
I got another advance.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's always good. Yay! Money is good.
The publisher, yeah. So that it works out. Yeah, the publisher, he really liked the songs, and he was quite a big name in this country, Ellis Rich, and he was on the board of the PRS. And I went in and I took the two songs into him, just a guitar and vocal, B singing and myself playing the guitar, and he liked them, and then he put money into it. And because he really did like the songs, he said, look, let's just start the contract again and everything, and we'll negotiate another advance for you, which was really nice. But it was disappointing not to get through, but the main thing was getting the tracks there, and I mean, and they're going to be released on an album in the fall by the French people as well.
Well, that's something, and that'll lead to something else.
Yeah.
So talk because we got to play that song. Let's talk about your latest album, Big Blue World, and the album was produced by Pat Collier, as we talked about, who produced Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine. Oh my God, I love that song. How could you not love that song? I cannot imagine anybody not loving Walking on Sunshine. I understand that it was recorded at Greenhouse Studios, London Abbey Road, and also the CBS Hit Factory. So you explained that's not the same. Greenhouse Studios is not the same where the Beatles recorded, but you have recorded at Abbey Road Studios, right?
Yeah.
You said that. Okay. So how cool was that? And how cool? Tell us any funny or exciting stories that happened while recording the album, or maybe something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we first went into the studio, we weren't working with Pat, first of all. And we were really nervous when we first started, because we went from recording demos in our bedroom to being in a studio with session people in about 8 weeks. So it was a bit daunting. And because I was the leader of the group, I had to go in first and put the first guitar down, which was a bit. And I had to tell the keyboard player, who was with the Moody Blues, and he wrote that I've Got the Music in Me for Kiki D. I had to tell him I didn't like what he was playing. So,
yeah. Oh, no! How did you do that? That must have been scary. Very delicately, I
imagine. Yeah, I did. He was fine about it, but you know, you might think, oh God, you know what? And they said, no, come on, you're the leader. You go in and tell him. But and it was okay. But we didn't fall out with that producer, but he was like driving us a little bit insane. To be quite, we were working from midday till 6 a.m. going home.
God.
I know.
What?
Yeah, I know, it was insane. So that's why we got Pat Collier, because I've been a big fan of Pat Collier. You know, like you said, with Katrina and the Waves, and he's done Voice of the Beehive, Belinda Carlisle, people. I was a big fan of his. So we got to work with him, and he was really brilliant about it. he came in, he took points on the album instead of taking the usual fee, which was great of him. And when we went to the studio, we used to start at 11 in the morning and finish by about 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, and then it was down to the pub for a few drinks, home again, then back. So we couldn't believe it the first night when we actually go home.
Had to fit that in, being British, had to hit the pub in the pint.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, what three things, it could be one thing, two things, yeah, three things, it's up to you. What, at least up to three things, do you wish that someone would have told you before you became a recording artist?
I think I would have wished somebody told me how difficult it was. I think if they'd have told me that you've got to be prepared for disappointment, that would have been a great thing, because that is one thing that you've got to overcome, the setbacks and the knockbacks from people. And you've got to have a belief that what you're doing is right. And hopefully, if you've got the talent, then someone's going to pick up on that. And also, I wish somebody had told me that when you do get signed, that the song that you've taken your life to write is now become a product, which is quite difficult to take, first of all.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you think of it as an art form.
It's, yeah,
an art that you created, and now it's a product and you got to sell it. You got to be a business. A lot of musical artists that I've run into, they don't want to deal with the business aspect.
No.
And I'm so sorry, but it's called show business, the entertainment business. So you have to promote it. You have to be your own sales team, marketing team, network team, promotion team. You got to be everything that a business does and has multiple people. You have to think of it individually, and you got to know how to do it. And if you don't, then you're not operating as a business. And if you're not operating as a business, you're the business is going to fold and you have to file bankruptcy. It's depressing, but it's true. So, those are really, really great tips. So, at what point in your life did you know that it was time to seek representation to help propel your music forward, like you did with Michael Stover?
Well, I think we've been aware of that since we had our first record deal, because the record company, as we mentioned on our bio, they got some money from a large amount of money from Sony, and they managed to blow it all, so that when it came out to our turn, the album disappeared without a trace because there was no money to promote it. And we could have done with the manager then. And that was sad, because it took us 16 months to get away from the record company. And when there was other labels that wanted to sign us, they then asked for all the money that they'd spent on us, which was about £75,000, which tended to put people off. And this time around, I would say that we just didn't want to leave it just to our publisher or record label to do it. We wanted to get somebody who would, you know, like, be on the ball. And I think Michael Stover certainly fits that bill, because, as you said, he just, it comes back on an elastic, doesn't it? An email when you send one to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Having a digital social media footprint is absolutely vital in promoting and maintaining and advancing your career in any field, not just music. So, you know, how do you do this and focus on creating music at the same time? Is it that you just say, okay, Michael, it's all up to you, I'm just focusing on the music? Or do you check in every once in a while to make sure that it's going the way you
want? I do. I've become, like, you know, obsessed with it now. I'm always looking. And at the moment, Big Blue World is number 5 in the Beat 100 video chart. We're actually about 10 places higher than Madonna, which I thought I'd never say.
Woo!
So let's hope that carries. Yeah, I mean, we had to bite the bullet and do that, because, you know, we were, I'll be honest with you, we were a little bit snobbish about it and everything like that, saying, look at these people, you know, what do they think they're doing? But we've done it. I think we try to do it in a considered way, but the French publisher have been great. They've done a video of one of our earliest songs, the one that got to number 3 in France. And yeah, we're taking a greater interest now. We're on Twitter, Facebook, we're on the lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got to be.
You gotta be. You can't.
I mean,
it's not shameless self-promotion. It's necessary. If you want to propel your music career, you better get out there and hit the social media and get your fan group. Because if you go to there's only a small amount of record labels left in this world. And when you go to them, they want you to have it all. They want the music produced, and they want it. They want the cover art done. They don't do that for you anymore. They want the full package. They want the CD, and then they take it and say, okay, see you later. We'll do our thing. And then they just do it. But they want it actually radio ready. So, and let me just tell you, people, let me just tell you from, I have the inside scoop. I have people who work at Capitol Records who are friends. I have people who work at many different labels. And I'll just tell you this. When they are deciding who to choose, if there are five groups and they're all comparable music, they are going to look at your social media footprint, and they're going to pick the person who has the biggest following. And that's just business. It's sad, it's cold, but that is what they're all about, making money. So you better build up your fan base, and however you need to do it, you better build it up, or else you're not ever going to get signed by a major label. All right, let's play this song. Okay, real quick, let's play it. Big Blue. Okay, really quick, because we're going to close the show out with the song. What is it about? Just tell us what it's about.
If you go down the A&R, they wanted a single. They wanted something that was immediate. So I thought I would write something a little bit anthemic. And each verse is just about, I mean, it sounds a bit corny. It's about like the quest for love and everything. And I thought, well, that's such a universal thing. Then I thought of you two and about their, even though I'm not their biggest fan, I thought, you know, some of their stadium songs are great. And I just wanted to write a song like that everyone could. It's a song that you can get in straight away. That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah, I listen to it. It's fantastic. I like it. I'm a fan, Neil. I'm a fan. Well, listen, I want you to come back on the show, so you feel free to contact me directly when you want to come on again and promote your next album or another song or whatever you want to do, because we want to have you back. If anything, definitely, just to listen to your accent.
Thank you. I'll tell you that. So, okay.
Say goodbye to your fans, Neil Fitzsimmons.
Oh, yeah. Well, just it's nearly 2 o'clock in the morning in the UK. So I think I'm still going to stay up and watch something else. We've got a TV series from America called Succession at the moment. I'm quite into that. So I mean, we'll watch that. And just thanks for having us on. And I hope you enjoy our music.
Well, maybe next time B can come on. We want to hear B. All right. So we are, you know, I just think you did a fantastic job. I love your energy. I love your music. I was very sad. I wanted to play the other one, which I absolutely loved. The, One Minute Every Hour. All of the songs are going on my personal playlist.
That's brilliant.
You'll be right underneath Harry Styles in One Direction. Right. Okay. All right. Well, we thank you, everybody. We're going to listen to, without further ado, we're going to listen to Fitzsimmons and Brogan's Big Blue World. And we'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.